This is the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors Podcast, episode 20. Good day, and welcome to this episode of the Fantasy Focus Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books. From epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, anything you can think of in between, you can expect to find the best and brightest books and authors discussed on this podcast from the various corners of the fantasy book world. Plus, we'll have other special guests we pick up along the way, so stay tuned. Currently, I'm trying to wrap up my first draft of the current urban fantasy project I'm working on. For some of you, this might signal that I'm done, but of course, if you know any authors out there, nothing could be further from the truth. Now the real work begins as I start digging into the rewrites necessary to pull the story into the kind of shape and flow that's needed to make it into a finished book. I don't know, it's kind of like somebody was asking me what it's like to do a rewrite, you know, from a first draft, and I was thinking, you know, it's like those people, the forensic experts, that, you know, take a skull and they turn it into a face to tell you what the person looked like in real life. In that case, I've got the meat and bones of the story, but now's the time where I put the flesh on top of it, along with the coloring and the facial hair and the warts and all the things that bring it to life in the reader's mind. At least, hopefully, that's what I'm doing. I'll try and include some snippets and updates on my Facebook page and group in the coming weeks as I get closer to getting finished with that part of the project. So you want to check that out. As always, if you're interested in that kind of thing, you can check out my fantasy fan group over on Facebook. It's Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans. You can also check out my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com as well. Let's shift gears and talk about our special guests for these episodes. This episode has featured two guests. Doug Burby and Mel Todd are two authors who decided to collaborate together on a really pretty fantastic project. It's dark and fantastical all at once. Mel has 17 stories of her own out, including her Caelid Chronicles and the Blood War series written with Doug. And she has more to come. She's the owner of Bad Ash Publishing, where she is creating a book empire full of good stories and great authors. With over a million words published, she's aiming for another million words in the next 2 years, all of them parts of stories that are going to grab you and make you hunger for more. And I have to agree, having read some of her books, I can't concur more. She really is a fantastic author. Combine that with Doug Burby, the co-author of her Blood Wars fantasy series, is constantly preparing to repel demon hordes, slay zombies, brew beer, and defeat the insidious plots of the bureaucratic machinery. That's a direct quote from what he sent me. Doug grew up in Asia as a military brat and went to college in Michigan, where he became a Detroit Lions fan in the Barry Sanders era of NFL greatness, so I guess I won't feel too sorry for him. That's pretty cool. He then served in numerous army positions and wars around the world before retiring just recently. Doug's now in the Military Technology Development Program as a program manager and works there by day when he's a demon slayer in his books at night. With muddy boots and a cold beer in hand, he spends his spring and summer weekends as a gentleman farmer tending to his hops vines and apple orchard. And I know Doug personally. He's a great guy, lives nearby here, and he's absolutely right. He's got a great place where he does just that. So check out my chat with Mel and Doug about their books and what it's like sharing a story when writing with another author. Here it is. So Mel, Doug, you guys are a first. This is the first time I've had a pair of authors on the show that write together. So welcome to the Fantasy Focus Podcast.
Oh, thanks, Jamie.
Yeah.
And the best pair, of course.
Of course. I had to start with the best, right? So you guys, I know Doug personally. I've met Mel now at a conference and gotten to know you a little bit too. But you guys have a really exciting series together, and we'll talk about that in a second. But maybe first I'll start with Mel. What got you started writing? Why don't you introduce yourself to the readers a little bit and tell them a little bit about what got you started writing?
Well, my name's Melissa Todd, and Oh, Lordy, I honestly cannot remember a time I wasn't writing. I've gone back and found things that I wrote in grade school that are horribly, horribly embarrassing and usually involved unicorns. In fact, they almost always involved unicorns. But a few years ago, I ended up in Georgia and was talking to a friend, and she's like, oh, you should go look at this stuff. It's fan fiction. And I went, what? Wait, this is me just writing out the stories in my head with my favorite characters. I can do this. And so I started doing a lot of fan fiction. I have like 500,000 words of fan fiction out there. And then I went, okay, I'm tired of playing in other people's universes. And about that time, one of my friends, Evan Curry, who I met via fan fiction, had started self-publishing his stuff. And I went, well, I have lots of story ideas. Maybe I can do this. And I wrote a couple romances first. I have some romances out there. And then, so this is the personal tragedy thing. My husband was killed about 3 years ago. And after he was killed, I just went, yeah, no, romance is bad. Not interested in writing romances. So I went back to my first love, which was science fiction, because I grew up reading Tarzan, John Carter of Mars, H.G. Wells, Jules Verne.
The classic stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both my parents were teachers.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
I always read. I was the kid that literally read every book in the children's section of the library. So the librarian was ordering new books for me. And I started writing the stuff I really have always wanted to write, which is much more science fiction. And it's a lot more fun to blow up planets than it is to try to get two people in bed together. It's easier to.
You know, you're right. That's an interesting way to put that, but I can't imagine writing romance. I wouldn't know. Well, that's one of the problems. If my wife always has to read my books before they go out to anywhere, because she has to tell me if I have enough like relationship stuff in it to pass test. Because the first book I wrote had like zero love interest in it at all. And you got to have at least some hint of like somebody's interested in somebody else. And I just don't do it.
And I've been doing it differently. I purposely wrote the series where there is no romance subplot. Now, there are family subplots. There are relationship subplots. But even though characters get together, it's, oh, they look cute together. And that's the extent of any conversation that's really done with it. Occasionally, some of the later novels have a little bit, but it's still just the relationship building, not, oh my gosh, are they going to jump into bed together? Because yeah. I suck at erotica.
No, and I don't have any of that either. So I think I just kind of hint at it too. And you know, oh, okay, they're a romantic interest. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're.
And leave it.
Then that's where it ends. You know, we assume they can do what they want to do in between the pages. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I posted the other day, I'd rather break my toe again than write a kissy scene in a book.
And Doug, this is a good time to introduce you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and kind of how you got started writing, because you kind of jumped into this a little later in life.
Yes, I did. Well, I'm Doug Berge. I'm the co-author of the Blood War series and creator of the Blood War universe. And you're right. I did start off a lot later in life. Much like Mel, as a kid, I was a voracious reader, but I decided I wanted to adventure into the world and join the army and become a soldier. So after college, joining the army, I had gone around, done a lot of interesting things inside of there, and happened to have one of my army buddies who said, meet me at a science fiction convention in Roanoke, Virginia. I'm going to be in town. I'd never been to a science fiction convention. I thought that'd be a pretty interesting thing to do. So I went down, and the first thing we do is let's go down to the bar, which sometimes happens at a science fiction convention. And he motioned over to a couple of guys who were sitting at a table. And he said, hey, these are a couple of friends of mine. And we sat down and started talking, and they were old retired military guys as well. So we started telling war stories. And my friend Shane had asked me, hey, what'd you think of this one particular book? And it was a book that he had recommended a couple months ago. I'd have read it, and I started making editorial comments about what I liked and didn't like about the story. And noticed one of the guys sitting at the table, his ears kind of perked up and sort of questioned the particular things I didn't like about the story and how it could be better. Ended up finding out he was actually a pretty prolific author that was taking my comments and
basically, with a little smile on his face, it said, you know, ask me how I would do it better. And I started giving him suggestions. So we actually kind of built up a rapport over the years. And as I wasn't a writer and hadn't really even thought about writing, he started sending me pieces of his book and some of his friends' books. At the time, I was working for the military doing advanced military technology development. So next thing you know, he's sending me half-finished chapters on books about space station shipboard maintenance facilities and conversations. And he says, you know, this captain's conversation with this maintenance chief doesn't sound right. Can you fix it? So I added a bunch of bureaucratic and maintenance type stuff and government ease about how complicated it is to get a spaceship widget from the planet to the ship in time and how he is just going to have to suck it up and wait. And over the years, I'd meet these guys every year and they kept asking me, when are you going to write a book? When are you going to write a book? You got some good stories, Doug. When are you going to write a book? And finally, after about 2 or 3 years, I said, you know, to be honest, I don't know how to spell. I flunked spelling in the fifth grade, and I definitely don't know how to write a book. And they said, see Mel Todd over there? She knows how to write books. And
they
I think
did
she's
not.
Why don't you go talk to her?
So if I thought that I was said, true, well, I'd be hunting down people to hurt them.
Oh, she actually has shown quite a bit of patience. So I ran some ideas over Mel, and, you know, she's living out of Alabama and I'm out of Maryland. After we had met at a convention, you know, we started conversing and talking offline, and that's where the remote part of the co-authorship is. And then we really started floating the ideas, and she's been very patient, taught me how to write, introduced me a thing called perspective and POV. apparently didn't know what that was when I sent her my first scene I tried to do. So after the first book that we had written together took a little longer than I would have expected to write, but really it was because Mel was very patient, she had a dozen or so books under her belt at the time and was willing to take the time with a new author and explain how to organize your thoughts and do things like actually create an outline when you're working with a co-author. Apparently that's an important thing to do as well. So no, really it wasn't until after I retired from the military and now I'm still doing technology development for the government, but as a civilian, it's really occupied every spare minute of sitting in the center aisle of an airplane or sitting in a hotel instead of watching Netflix. Now I write.
That's awesome though. And you know, it's interesting, to hear you talk about how you kind of developed to, because if you're working in a group, two of you writing, you really do have to have an outline. I mean, you can pants it a little bit by yourself, but you can't do that when you're writing with someone else, because you really do need that roadmap, right, Mel?
Oh, yes. There's lots of stuff where I'm like, okay, wait, you told me this character is going to do X. That makes no logical sense. Why would that character do this? And then
but I know,
like,
exactly why the character is going to do that, because Y and Z is going to happen. Oh, I should have probably told you that.
We have lots of those conversations. I'll I'm bet. Like, yes, that. Actually, part of it was we were just chatting after one of the cons via Messenger. And he's like, I've always wanted to write a book. I'm like, so do it. Well, I know how to do it. Yes, you do. You put words on the paper. He's like, that's it. I'm like, I'll help you. And we just started doing this whole back and forth, you know, just creating stuff on the fly, having fun with it. And after a couple months of that, I went, you know what? We've written like 30,000 words of a novel. Maybe we should actually write the novel.
It's a great novel. Yeah, and you're talking about Blood Wars, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and it really was.
Go ahead, Doug.
It had just trying to explain the, you know, when I have a universe or concept in my brain, and when you're talking about collaborating with a co-writer, that's where we learned in the first book the difficulties sometimes that you have. Like, Mel's a prolific writer. She writes very quickly. I actually write relatively slowly. And when the universe is kind of in your head and I could tell you where I think this character is going to be, I could tell you who a character is going to live or die 3 books later. That doesn't really translate mentally to your co-author unless, you know, you have the good outlines. And even when I started the outline, that's when I started noticing, and Mel would make comments, we really need to work on world building. so that I understand when I'm writing what my constraints and limitations are. When you have things like magic in there, what are your rules of magic? What are the types of creatures? We have multiple races in Blood War, and demons are a critical part in there, but what's the demon's social structure like? Are they male and female gendered? What is their hierarchy like? What's their government like? And those are things I had never really considered about the world. Mel had said at one point, says you think of your book almost in a screenplay like attitude. You see it running in your head, but I need to understand why things are going on. So that's when we actually started working up the actual world itself in the Bible, which is actually really great now, as I know. So we got a couple books in there going back to refer things, because I trip myself up. And if I trip myself up as a co-author, then it turns into a train wreck that Mel has to work on. She's like, why did you go left here? We've never gone left with this type of element of the story before. Is there a reason for this? And sometimes it's like, no, wasn't a reason. I forgot where I was.
Yeah, and so when you guys wrote the story, it looks to me like, Doug, did you write the male character, and Mel, you wrote the female character?
Honestly, we bounced back and forth a lot.
He wrote, did you?
Cater, okay. A lot of scenes of Cater. I wrote a lot of scenes with Declan. A lot of times they'd be like, oh, wait, I have the perfect scene that'll fit here, and we'd just go write it. And then I would go through and try to smooth out everything to keep the voice the same, and then he'd go through and fix. Doug is a freaking genius at dialogue. He can write like 4 or 5 pages of dialogue, and my only complaint tends to be, would you tell me who's talking? I'm enjoying the conversation. I have no idea who said this, because he had the voices so clear in his head.
Dialogue, which you don't want too many of them, but you need a few of them scattered here and there, right?
Well, yeah, apparently he has 5 majors in the room. Saying major doesn't help me.
That's great.
Yeah, and that's other things. I mean, when I grew up, the writing classes that I had throughout my career were military writing style, which is not conducive to science fiction writing. And I also learned that.
Well, I mean, it's not really narrative writing, right? I mean, it's much different than fiction. So that's fair. But
no, it would be Declan walked into the room, shot the bad guy, left.
Yeah, just the facts.
The first outline he sent me, I read it, and I sent him this email back, and I went, so this is a great requirements document. Can we actually get an outline with some plot points in it?
That's
because
great.
Literally, we're both project managers in our day jobs, or the equivalent thereof. He literally sent me a requirements document for the book saying, and at this point, Declan will need to do this. And then at this point, these characters will need to come in and say this. And I'm like, can I get something a little bit more narrative and less requirements document?
So then this brings me around to the story itself, because it's really an interesting world you guys have built there. And Blood War is literally about the magic, it appears, in these stories are really revolve around the power inherent in blood. Correct?
Yes.
Yep. And so Doug, was this an idea that you had for a while of, you know, is this something that was bouncing around in your head, or did you guys come up with this idea for how the magic was going to work together?
The magic really was, it started with Mel, because we were trying to find the device to move the story. Originally, my story was based on, and Blood War Rage actually starts a couple years after an apocalyptic, devastating war on the planet, where the militaries of the planet fought a demon invasion to standstill, to a truce. And the story was to start off with one of the few surviving military members and deal with how he dealt with the after effects of the war. And then you get into the government secret plots and all the fun stuff that goes into it as he's sucked back into the world of fighting demons when he really just wanted to retire to the woods and have a cold beer and watch football and call it a day. Well, the magic component with the blood came from my being a novice author at the time was that, oh yeah, and magic's going to exist in this world. And that's when I had ideas that the demons were coming to the earth really to kind of harvest the human blood. And Mel started asking the question, says, well, I think at one point she said, you have magic. I don't know how your magic works. And why are the demons here harvesting blood? And I said, well, the blood gives them power. And that's really where Mel was able to kind of create the magical construct of, well, what if the magical power resides in blood? And we had actually gone through a very complicated structure that we were putting together with different types of blood, A positive, B positive, O, what type of magical attributes were it's in. And sometimes we had to simplify that down to not overcomplicate it. But really, Mel showing me the importance of world building drove us into how we tied magic into blood itself as a catalyst, as a device in the story. That made sense when you're dealing with multiple races, but still have the same organic elemental power of magic. How does it work? How do you make it work? And that becomes more prolific as the story goes along, and the principles of magic in the other books in relation to blood becomes much more important to the story than you might initially pick up.
No, it's fascinating, and the idea that, you know, that the demon blood is powerful too. That, you know, all blood is power, and that's kind of neat. I enjoyed that aspect of it. So where do you think you guys are going to go? I mean, you've got I think what, two books out and a novella. Is that correct?
One book, two novellas okay. out. We are about 50% of the way through book two. We're still arguing whether or not this series will be done at book three or book four. I'm betting four, because I don't think he can wrap up all of his plot points by three. And then we have plotted out four standalone novels for each of the characters that survive at the end to wrap up the entire series.
Awesome. That's exciting.
And then a standalone novella for Cordelia's character.
And the one novella is a kind of a step back to look at the actual apocalyptic war, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Blood War Fight, which was the first prequel that we wrote. And initially, I'd never intended on actually writing a war book. I fought in a couple wars, so it wasn't really something that I thought I wanted to become the retired military guy who just writes war books, you know, just writes about the wars. But the comments we got back after the first book came out, because the war is covered essentially in the first three or four pages of Blood War Fight. And the comments we came back was really, I want to hear about the war. You know, it sounds really interesting. It's different. You know, it's a concept of how a global war was fought with the demons that hadn't really been delved into. So they thought about it and talked to Mel about it, and actually turned out to be a hugely fun book to write. Because there was some items in the first part of Rage when we had referred to some epic battles and things like that, that we thought it'd be really interesting to actually write what happened there. And that's where Blood War Fight came out, to really take the main character of Declan and Shane, who was his buddy in there, and really go back in the history of why did they become the guys who were like the recluses hiding in the woods? What made them that way? So it was that was a very, very fun book to write, much more so than I thought it would be. But I didn't have to do a lot of math. It wasn't a spaceship battle, so I didn't have to have a slide roll out there and call astrophysicist friends and ask how things work, because I could actually refer back to technologies and weapons and things that I'd seen fighting in Iraq or different types of activities like that. So I could relate to the characters very well, which actually made for some very good dialogue. Most of the dialogue and fight is stuff that I'd actually heard soldiers say to me, or I said to them at some point in time.
Okay, if you're putting guns to people's heads and threatening to kill them if they don't follow orders, there's a lot of stuff you haven't told me.
Well, there's a literary license inside of there. The context.
It's what he was thinking.
Got it.
Yeah. Well, it's really a fascinating world. And, you know, the world building time that you two took to kind of flesh things out and make it make sense really shows in the writing. Because you can really get a sense that there is this underlying structure and hints of it start to appear here and there so that you start building it in the back of your head as you're reading, which is just a great way to expose things, much better than just having that expository chapter that explains everything.
Yeah. And really it set up the base. Mel really went in when we were writing Power, which is the last prequel novella in there, that really focuses in on the magic. And we actually bring in another race into it as well. And it allows that to actually expand. And those two prequel novels feed into Betrayals that we're writing right now in Alliances, which is kind of the cap of the main part of the series. And it makes it a lot easier for us to work independently, you know, through the geographic side. I mean, we use Scrivener inside of there to put the Mel kind of handles the main load of that, but we use file sharing services. So we have a main data file. So when I upload my pieces in there, she'll have to kind of read where I went, and I have to read where she went to kind of tie it together. But all else fails, we can check back into the notes. You know, the world building, the character definitions, even, you know, what does characters like to wear? What are their personal mannerisms and tics? It makes it a lot easier for smoothing over the characters because we do jump. And she'll write Declan, and there's a character called the Director in there that I really love because he's a political bureaucrat. And I deal with political bureaucrats all the time. So sometimes there's characters you want to put your hands around a little bit more, but you got to release to the co-author. So letting them understand what the motivations are, things that don't end up in the book. I mean, we've got novellas worth of materials that have been cut from the book that each of us have written that didn't quite fit the story. That might be a novella later, but that's all because we've learned about the world, and the world actually has more to it than you're seeing in this first series of books. And that's why there's going to be several more before this basic plot thread's done. And then our spin out books, to actually enhance each one of those characters that we built.
Yeah. I have an odd chapter here or there that I cut out of every book, you know, that just tends to be world building thoughts that end up in the first draft. And I needed them because I needed to get it on paper so that I understood what was going to happen next. And they didn't really need to have, they didn't need to be in there for the reader. But I find, like you said, that they can make interesting stories, either short stories or novellas on their own when you flesh them out a little bit. And I actually, you know, sometimes in my newsletter, I turn them into short stories and just offer them to people, you know, readers in my newsletter, just for, you know, they get access to the deleted scenes, kind of.
Ooh, we could do that with Cordelia.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really, actually, that's how Blood War Power came to be. I had introduced the character in the book as a friend of the main character, Declan. And Mel enjoyed writing him so much, she wanted to write his backstory and history.
Oh, you know, Shane needed... is fascinating.
Shane is such a jerk. I have so much fun writing Shane. He is an amoral, arrogant jerk.
Like I said, fascinating.
He's a blast.
But he's loyal and he has a heart, and you... Really, in Betrayals that we're writing right now, you really start to get exposed to much more of his inner workings, thought process. There's more from his perspective on what's going on and what his ideas are. I don't know if you want to call him an anti-hero, but he's pretty close.
He's an anti-hero. He may have his own code of morals, but that doesn't mean he's not going to slit your throat without blinking.
That's true. I did just have to kill a bunch of people.
Well, and I think it's those characters that I know several books that I've read where, I was rooting for the hero, but I was much more interested in reading the sections that had to do with what was going on with the antagonist as opposed to the protagonist, because they were, I don't know that I thought, sometimes I think authors put a lot more flesh and bone on the bad guys because they try to explain the way they're trying to explain why they're bad. People, you know, the good guy can be the white hat and come in and save the day, but why is the bad guy a bad guy? You know, or why is the anti-hero the anti-hero in this case? And I think that kind of thing can often draw readers into those types of characters a lot deeper. What do you think, Mel?
Well, see, I actually find that funny because I just finished writing the second to last book in my other series, and one of the bad guys who's been a bad guy since like book three is now clamoring for her own standalone novel because she is so freaking fascinating. And I'm trying to figure out how to write the novel as a standalone novel that actually happens after the series ends, because she is not human. So she doesn't think like a human. She doesn't have the same moral reactions, but she has her own code. And it's just fascinating. I am really, I have like two different things I want to write right now, and that's one of them.
Hey, let's shift gears because I want to talk about the Caelid Chronicles before we wrap up. And this is your urban science fiction series about shifters, which you'd think is an urban fantasy, but it's not because they're shifters.
There's
because
no
of alien technology.
So I have had this idea in my head for probably 3 or 4 years, and I literally wrote book one, I think, 4 different times from different perspectives, trying to figure out how to make it work. I love werewolves. I'm a huge gamer, you know, so I've done lots of White Wolf and LARP gaming and tabletop and stuff. So I've gamed most of my life. So I love shifters. I was so tired of the fated mate. I was so tired of the whole hiding in the shadows, unable to come out into the light of day sort of tropes, that I'm like, I want to write a shifter story where they are front and center. There is no hiding. There is no nothing. And I just love the idea of having a cop shift in front of everybody, have it go viral, and then just watch the dominoes fall. Because you can't hide it at that point. There's no people slipping in. And then it just got more and more complicated because I kept having to do the world building. So, okay, what affected them? Well, nanobots. Well, somebody had to send them. Who sent them? Well, aliens. Well, why did the aliens send them? Well, they want foot soldiers. Awesome. So what happens when the aliens show up to get their foot soldiers and don't find what they expect? And every time I solved one question, it created another question, which is why it's now like an 8-book series.
Which is, there's nothing wrong with that, honestly.
And that's how Mel got me into figuring out math for spaceships one day on my whiteboard. Well, how long would it take if the ship, she gives me a word problem. If the ship can travel this fast and this long and hold this many people, and the big ship holds this many people, how many people can they move in X amount of days? I'm like, all right, this is math. This is why I shoot demons.
I did. I was trying to figure out how long it would take him to unload a ship full of 500,000 people.
That's a lot of people,
multiple
too.
Days.
Well, think about it, Doug. How many, you know, how long would it take to get 500,000 troops off of troop transports ashore using landing craft?
To my credit, I did it on a whiteboard. And I did not ask a single one of the engineers that works for me to use taxpayer time to come and figure out this word problem for me, which I promise.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I would have asked them during lunch. See, that's where we differ.
No, that's when I pimp books, is during lunchtime.
That's why I married a math major. So that's just why that happened, because I'm no good at math.
Exactly. I finally decided to take the easy way out and crash the ship into the planet.
Well, that's one way to get them down.
It was just easier.
No, that's great.
Wait a minute. I did the math. Wait, you're not using my math? Now I'm hurt. All right.
No, the math proved that it would take too long to get them off the ship.
Okay, that's true. And teleporters are cheating.
Yes. See, that's why my science fiction tends to be space opera. Because it's just easier. You can have space magic.
See, I even had a teleporter. The problem is there's still only so many people you can get through it at any point in time. And when you've had 50 shuttles filling the ship up for a week and you've got a few hours to get them all off, the math wasn't working.
No, it's a problem. I mean, and to your credit, I don't know. There are a lot of authors out there who would just say, and they got down to the planet.
Yeah.
It would have, you know, it would have been that long. And you would have been 2 days later, all the aliens were on the planet. So
I have the characters arguing about how long it's going to take, with them going, yeah, no, by my calculations, it's 8.7 days. And they're like, oh, well, we have 2 hours before the bombs go off.
Wow.
Yeah, no, we can't get them out that fast.
So we're kind of getting close to time to wrap up here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where folks can find you and the Kalid Chronicles and what you're working on at the current time?
Well, you can find both Doug and me at badashpublishing.com. And that's my publishing company. We've got these two series and soon a couple more. I am working the last full novel of the Kalid Chronicles. My betas have returned to me, so I need to edit, which means I will be avoiding it for another couple days because editing is awful. And I'm working on the very last story that should hopefully wrap up the Chronicles but set it up for multiple other series. And then I have an urban fantasy series that I'm desperate to start because it's calling my name badly, but I'm working on Rules of Magic. Other than that, I will be at Liberty Con at the end of June, beginning of July, and then I will be at Dragon Con as an attending professional this year in Atlanta, Georgia.
Awesome. Yeah, I might actually be at Dragon Con this year too. So I've got a friend there that needs some help in his author booth, and I get to bring some books with me to sell if I want. So
awesome.
I might take him up on that. I've got to figure out the logistics of it all, but yeah, that's going to be exciting.
DragonCon is an event in and of itself.
Yeah, definitely. And you're close by, so that's easy.
Yeah, usually I just drive down and we stay at the hotel the entire weekend, though. I'm not doing that to myself.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. Doug, how about you? Where can folks run into you, either online or in person?
Well, online, I kind of work through the Twitter account through at Badash Books on Twitter, as well as the Badash Publishing Facebook page. I add my comments inside of there. So right now I'm working on finishing up the current thread that we have with Mel on the Blood Wars series. And I'm also working on plotting out the standalone books, that'll come out following it. That'll follow the end lives, essentially, or maybe other types of lives of the characters. And working on the next idea for next year on what standalone series I'll be working in. So I'll also be at Liberty Con in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the end of June this year as well. And I'm looking at the more regional Northeast conventions for later in the year to attend as well.
Awesome. And you know what? I didn't think of it, but next year we'll have to get you up here for CecilCon 2020, which is in April. And it's close enough to you that you could drive up and have an author table for a Saturday. And it's a nice little con. And they get like 1,500 to 2,000 people coming in from Delaware, southeastern Pennsylvania. It's a surprising number of people coming to this little rural community college event. But it'll be a lot of fun. So we'll have to remind me. I'll give the information so you can sign up to get it notified when they open up for next year.
As his publisher, absolutely. I am volunteering him to do this.
Sorry, Doug. I hope I didn't get you into something.
Told.
All right, yes, ma'am. Awesome. Well, listen, both of you, it's been great having you on. I want to have you back, so I'm going to, you know, put that out there and give you a rain check if you want to come back and
always
come back another time. Especially, I want to hear about this urban fantasy series you've got coming in the background there.
I'm so excited. I've been doing all of the world building and everything else. I have the entire 7-book series laid out.
Awesome. Well, we'll
I have to finish everything else first.
I know how that works.
Shiny. I want to go play with the shiny.
Well, listen, it's great having you both on the show. And like I said, though, everything will be in the show notes. We'll have links to everything that you guys talked about and your books. And I just want to urge everybody to get out there and check out both the K-League Chronicles and Blood War, which is a really great collaboration between the two of you. I think people will really enjoy it.
Thank you. It was great fun.
Jamie.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Fantasy Focus podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. We have a lot of great stuff over both in the Facebook group and over at the website, and they're different. We don't like duplicate a lot of stuff over there. So in the Facebook group, we have author chats on a regular basis where we bring fantasy authors in and they kind of hang out for the day. And you can ask them questions and talk to them about their books and all kinds of stuff. So you'll want to head over and check that out. And then over at fantasy-focus.com, you'll find this podcast, regular reviews of books, interviews on text interviews with authors where we send authors a bunch of questions and they give us their answers and we put that and turn it into an article. Also on the website, we have our podcast, as I said. And on each podcast episode host, post, you'll want to make sure you subscribe. So check out our subscription links, whether you're on whatever your mobile device of choice is, iOS, Android. You can even subscribe by email, folks, but you want to do that because we have a lot of great people coming up, including our next episode with Anthony Ryan for the next podcast. So you want to check that out. Anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. This is it for this episode of the Fantasy Focus Books and Authors podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me as well over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want, you can get a free book just by signing up for my newsletter to get my updates over there. Whatever you do, though, subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. So I guess that's it. I'll just remind you, as I always do, keep your eyes open, folks. Guess what? There's magic all around you.